Welcome to Hope Talks, where we share inspiring stories of hope in Jesus Christ. Hope Talks is hosted by Pastor Margaret Michael and Grayson Willis. Join us for uplifting stories of triumph, faith, and the enduring power of Christ's love. Also, if you're in the listening area, tune in to 1470 AM or 102.1 FM WBTX to listen to Hope Talks every Sunday at noon.
Welcome to today's broadcast of Hope Talks. I'm Grayson Willis. Thanks for tuning in. And today I have the pleasure of being joined by Ruthie Griffin. Ruthie, how are you doing today?
Hey, Grayson, how are you? I'm doing good.
I'm doing good. Good to have you. Ruthie is the wife of our pastor, Kevin Griffin. So we're so glad to finally get Ruthie in here. We had Kevin on a little while ago on Hope Talks, so it's good to finally get Ruthie in here. Ruthie, just start out by telling us about where you're from and about how you grew up.
Sure. Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate being here. Yeah, so I am originally from New Jersey, born and raised. I spent most of my life there. I'm the last born of six.
Wow.
And I always tell people I had the privilege to feel like a firstborn and an only child and yet the last born, because all of my siblings were much older than I was when my brother was, or the last at that point was 10, then I was born. And so most of my other siblings were getting ready to be married, go to college, and or go to the military. So, I feel like I have a little bit of firstborn tendency,
right.
Only child tendencies, and right. last born,
right.
which I guess can be a little confusing for people. So that's a little bit about my childhood. My parents were older when I was born. My dad was 50 when he met my mom, who was 20, and then they had us kids. So
I was going to ask what the age range. You mentioned that your next closest sibling was 10 years older than you. So what about to the oldest?
Yeah, so my oldest brother would have been Russell. He has passed away, but he was 17 when I was born. And then next in line would have been my sister Ada, and she was 15, 16. And then Carlos and Anna would have been next, and they were, as well, teenagers. So
what was it like growing up in New Jersey in a pretty big family, but also, like you said, it was a little bit of kind of an only child, first child, even though you were the youngest. So yeah. What was it like growing up?
So I always think that when I say this to people, it's like a little bit of chaos mixed in with a little bit of, quietness. I always feel that I got the best of both worlds. My parents, I think, were tired of disciplining, so I got away with a lot of things, good and bad to that. I have a really close relationship with my siblings now. I think I had the best of both worlds to say that, yeah.
Was church a part of your growing up at all?
So, interestingly enough, I didn't grow up in church. I went to church periodically with my dad before he passed away. My dad passed away when I was 10.
Wow.
And so I didn't have a father figure other than my brother, my oldest brother. And so my dad would take me to church occasionally. I was very young, my formative years. So no, I can't say that I grew up in church. As I got older, I went to church. Here's a fun fact. With my dad, I went to a Pentecostal church. And then as I got older into my teenage years, I knew friends and some people that were Catholic. And so we would go to Catholic church.
Right.
And then probably in my, later teens, early 20s, I walked away from the faith. So, yeah. So what I knew of the Lord and of church was just very basic. I can't say that I had a profound relationship or was walking with the Lord at any point till probably my later 20s.
You mentioned one thing, and I can't even imagine this because I still have both of my parents, but I can't imagine losing a parent at the age of 10. Just share about that.
Yeah, so he was much older than my mom, right? So he was 76 when he passed. I was 10. So he was 67 when I was born. I have memories of him, not many. I can honestly say that I've heard lots of stories about him, but I don't recall a lot other than, he cooked.
Right.
He was a chef for a trade. So I do remember some of holidays and things like that where he was in the kitchen, but it was a void in my life. You know, I also remember because he was so much older, like in elementary school, all of the kids would say, "Hey, is that your grandpa?" And yeah. I'd have to, you know, bounce up and say, "No, that's my dad." And I didn't know any different.
Right.
Until later on, you know, and I realized that he was much, right. much older than most parents. Yeah. So a lot of the years, my mom, it was just my mom and I, my brother, Rusty stepped in. He did a really good job at my father figure at that right. Point. In fact, I remember anytime my mom felt like she just couldn't handle me, she'd say, "I'm going to call your brother." And I knew.
You knew that you needed to straighten
yeah,
up.
I definitely knew. Yeah. And he lived in New York. So he had, you know, he was living, you know, living a life as an adult there. So, but he was very active in my life. However, when I was in my early 20s, he passed away, probably my 25. Wow. He passed away. He had colon cancer. And so he was about 40 at that point and passed. Yeah, so I've seen, you know, I've had some hard times and loss early
guess.
On.
How has that shaped you? Those mm-hmm. type of things that would have an impact. I haven't experienced the loss of a sibling or a parent. How does that shape you, change you?
Yeah, I think initially it's a loss that I don't think you feel as though you can replace or
right.
fill,
right?
And so I, in saying that, I can see seasons in my life where I was just not headed in the right direction. Right. You know, many instances where I just got involved in a lot of things that I knew I shouldn't be involved in, but it's just where I headed, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that void certainly directed me in those paths. And my mom did, she did the best she
right,
could.
Right,
but she was trying to run a household, work, and, you know, she did the best that she could. Right. So certainly it's given me some resiliency for sure. Right. And I feel that even yet in that loss, I had a lot to gain. You know, my mom and I were really close, even to when she passed away about 12 years ago. Like, I would talk to her every day. Like, right. it was different for my mom and I. And my siblings, you know, they all kind of filled the gap where we had those voids.
Right. So you mentioned that it had an impact on you, obviously. And would you say, you said when you got into your early 20s, you said you went to the Catholic Church some with some friends and different things. But in your early 20s, you walked away from your faith. Mm-hmm. Did the impact of losing your brother have an effect in that?
Yeah, I think partly, right? I think I was a teenager. Right. I was in my early 20s when my brother passed. I was just involved right. in friendships that I shouldn't have been. But yet I had other right. friends that went to church. And so I was almost wrestling with the right. whole idea of, you know, living for myself, right. And for myself, but also, getting to know the Lord. And I feel like I may have, just chose to turn my back, right? Like, I knew the words of right. the Lord, but I didn't know that right. he was the word.
Right.
Right. Until, you know, later in right. my 20s. But I just think that I was so wrapped up in, just trying to fill all of those losses.
Right.
And quite honestly, probably looking for someone to love me in the sense right. of a fatherly love.
Right.
And I was looking in the wrong places,
so,
you know?
It sounds like what you're saying is you religion, but not relationship.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. For sure. You know, I can remember vividly a lot of times I'd come home after being out or what have you. And I can remember not being in relationship with God at all, but feeling a sense of I had to apologize to him. Right. And I can remember having conversations, you know, just laying in bed going, "Lord, I don't know you like that, but yeah. I'm really sorry because I know that right. I shouldn't have been there or I shouldn't have been doing what I was doing often." And yet there was a sense where I just felt that he was pursuing me. He's, you know, such a gentleman
right,
in that
right.
way that
yeah.
Just allowed me almost going to let you do and
right.
be, but I'm still tapping you on the shoulder.
Right.
It's pretty incredible.
He loves each and every one of us personally. Sure. And I love that description. He pursued you. He pursues all of us. And in our denomination, the Nazarene Church, we call that prevenient grace. Mm-hmm. It goes before us.
For sure. I heard a podcast just recently where someone said, you know, we're so fortunate that we don't see God's backside ever.
Yeah.
Like we don't walk behind him. He's not giving us his back. Instead, he walks alongside us or heart to heart. So facing us. Right.
Right.
And I just thought that's exactly how I feel that he was walking with me all those years where I was giving him my back, but he was not.
Right. So. Yeah. It's, we always say we found God. No, not that we found God because he's always been there, but he found us because we're the ones that are lost. Yeah. God's not lost.
Yep. Yep.
And God can speak to us any way he wants to, but what are some things in your late 20s that he did to let you know that he was a loving father and that he was pursuing you?
Yeah, I think often I found myself in, you know, new friendships or just speaking to people that were in right relationship with God. And I was always attracted to that, but yet not willing to make that commitment to him. I think those, you know, those were times where I felt that he was still, you know, actively in my life. I'm trying to think of other times where I felt that he would chase me around, I think. Right. My sister Ada became a believer late in her life, but I also remember thinking, man, that's so cool, you know, like she's just turned her life around and she is sold out for this guy, Jesus, you know? So I think that that was really a pivotal point for me.
Right. And you saw a change in her life.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. For sure. Yeah, I mean, she's just a changed creature. So that's been really cool.
And that's what the power of the Holy Spirit and the power of Christ does in our lives when he comes in. And I know this story, but I'm going to ask it. Talk about meeting Pastor Kevin for the first time, how you all kind of got together.
That definitely was special. It was a gift for sure. Yeah. Undeserved. We met at a Wawa. I was working at a Wawa part-time, and during the day, I had a full-time position with a physician's office. And then Kevin, at that point, was teaching, so he would work. This would have been in the summer, correct. In the summers at Wawa during the day, and I'd work at night. So we never saw each other, had no idea who he was. But our manager, sneaky guy, would talk to each of us separately about the other, and you know, I always tease Kev that our manager sort of forced me to call Kevin. Not so, but I just think, you know, when I started working at Wawa, I can vividly also remember the morning that I went into that Wawa. I was heading into work, stopped in to get my coffee as I usually did. And for whatever reason, the Lord was like, you know, you should work here. And I walked right into the office to ask for an application, and all I said was, "Hey, are you hiring?" And the manager said, "Hey, yeah, when can you start?" And that's how it all started. You know, a couple months in, he had Kevin drop by, and that's how we met. But just really neat how that all happened.
And I think the Lord told him to hire you, didn't he?
Yeah, that's so. We're still friends with him. His name is John. And he's been awesome. But that's exactly what he said. He just saw me right away and he was like, "You got to hire her. That's who you need to hire." And I just, when I think of that, I mean, I had never worked at a convenience store ever. Mm-hmm. And not that there's anything wrong with it. Like, I love Wawa. It just wasn't something that I had ever even thought about. And it's really cool how the Lord would just do that.
Right.
At that point, I was not, you know, I wasn't serving the Lord. I wasn't living for the Lord. So I just feel that it's just so incredible that he would still want to gift such a beautiful thing to my life. I mean, it completely has changed my life in the course of our legacy, right? But I think that's been really cool.
That's cool. Yeah. The Lord can use people in your lives to draw you closer. You talked about your sister and then about Pastor Kevin, and he grew up in a Christian family also. And So I'll say this first. This is your all's second time in Harrisonburg in Rockingham County. So what brought you here the first time?
So the first time what brought us here was a coaching position for Kevin. And Jazz would have been about 3 months old. We had been married for almost 2 years at that point. And I remember vividly when Kev got a call from a friend of his and said, hey, you know, EMU is looking for a women's basketball coach. And at that point, Kevin was teaching and coaching high school boys. So it was completely change for us. For me, it was a huge change, transition. I had never been away from home, never been out of New Jersey to live in, other than when I was four. My parents moved to Puerto Rico and we lived there for 4 years. But we had just had a baby.
Not really an ideal time to move, right?
No, not at all. But it was really neat how the Lord just worked out those details. And we were here in September, so we're October-ish.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was really cool how those details all kind of worked out, panned out. We moved, and we were here during our first stint, 13 years. It was really good. It was a good run. The Lord was super good to us and allowed us to, you know, start our family, raise our family here. This is sort of what they know as home. This is what I feel is home for me, too. So, so it's been good.
And what brought you all to the Nazarene Church the first time? How did you?
Again, lots of, a couple of friends that Kevin had gone to EMU with were coming to First Church back then. That's what it was called. And so we didn't give it another thought. Of course, you know, that's where we're going to go. And we came, and Kevin had been here a couple of times. I think he had even attended a Sunday school class at some point. And it was a natural thing, I think, to do. And we never left. This was home. We met lots of great friends. And I would say that they're chosen family members.
Right.
The
Bible says, and this could apply brother or sister, a friend closer than a brother. So.
Indeed.
You know, friends can become family.
Yeah, for sure.
So you mentioned that you all were here 13 years the first time. And I know we did Kevin's testimony, but I'd love to hear your perspective on God calling you away from Harrisonburg, away from the Shenandoah Valley to Pennsylvania.
So I was going to say, I'll backtrack a little bit. I think that while we were here,
right.
I think our family learned to share Kevin. Right. Like the kids and I learned to share Kevin as a coach. Right. And we learned to have him gone for certain times and be all things to people as he was. And I think when the time came that the Lord transitioned us to Pennsylvania, I think I personally felt a little... More sold out, I guess, for lack of a better way to put it.
Right.
Sold out to the idea, like, sure, that's what you want us to do. That's what we're going to do. And I never felt apprehension about it. I just felt sure in who the Lord is and the fact that he is trustworthy. And if he says that he wants us to do X, Y, and Z, then that's what we're going to do. I mean, I've come to believe that my purpose is to worship God, right? And I think that's all of our purpose,
right?
To worship the Lord and make disciples. Right. And, you know, the Bible says that many other plans in the hearts of men, but the purpose of the Lord will prevail. And I stand firm on that. And so, you know, we went to Pennsylvania and Kevin's role changed from being a connections pastor to being a pastor of a church and shepherding people. And I think that through the past years of being here and, as I said before, being a lot of things to a lot of different people, just prepared us as a family to be able to take that on and be okay with it. I mean, I'm not saying it didn't go with some heartache, you know, like transitioning the kids into a new environment and new people and a new community, new schools, new church, but the outcome surely just outweighs all of that.
Yeah, I know. Recently, Pastor Margaret and I were recording with Pastor Margaret's former assistant, Edie Adams, who her and her husband, Walt, a few years ago, felt a call to go to North Carolina, to move to North Carolina. And she was talking about the things that she had to give up the things that she had to mourn, but how they're in a church now, they're plugged in, they're serving, and how just, you know, when you're obedient to God, when you surrender, because that's what I hear you saying, surrender. It's not easy to obey God.
That's right.
But it's always worth it. Would you say that it's worth it?
For sure. For sure. There is a lot of transitioning and you sacrifice, right? A lot.
Yeah.
But and I sometimes, not that I want to over-spiritualize things, but that sacrifice is minimal, right? Compared to the sacrifice that the Lord has made for us on a daily. But I just do believe that He will see us through whatever we face. I don't doubt that at all.
And our obedience affects other people, because when we obey God, then other people are called to fill those spaces.
Very good. That's a really good point. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. That's a really good point. Yeah, and I think that that is certainly what's happened in Pennsylvania, where we were, where people have been called to fill in those gaps and step in and step up, right? So that's been really, I think that's a gift to all of us. But I also think, too, that, you know, if we fail to be obedient in the things that are small to the Lord, then He's not going to continue to trust us to move on, in the direction that He wants us to go in. And for our kids, like, I want them to be strong in knowing that, you know what, my parents trusted the Lord, and that's how I'm going to live. And granted, all of that, and they may still, you know, God forbid, they may still turn aside, I pray that that never is a thing, but sure. But I know that what we've lived out in front of our kids is real, and that that is a solid foundation for them to stand on, live in, and live out, because now they'll need to do the same for someone else.
Well, hopefully I can encourage you and say that I know, well, when my dad left photography for Bible college, I was five, but I remember moving away from my grandparents halfway across the country, that was a huge sacrifice. And then I was an adult when this happened, but when God called Dad away from this church, and it didn't make sense at the time, but looking back on it, it's like, I tell Dad all the time, it's like that picture with the kid handing their little teddy bear to Jesus, and Jesus has this big old stuffed teddy bear behind us. So like, I think that, and I hope, you know, one day, if not today, your kids will be able to see your obedience was that God has bigger things planned for us than we can think or imagine.
Yeah, that definitely gives me a grateful heart. Yeah, for sure. That's special. Yeah.
So anything you'd like to share about your time in ministry, whether it be in Pennsylvania, here, either stints, because like Kevin mentioned, when Dad called him, he felt like he was in ministry and basketball, and he shared some about how you all built relationships with the ladies on his team. Y'all would have meals with them. Yeah. Y'all would invite them to church.
Yeah.
So just any step, you know, it's all ministry. It all looks different.
Yeah, I think that's a neat question. I feel that, like for me, because that's how we lived, right? We sort of had an open door to Kevin's teams, to friends. I feel that way still. Like, I love to have people over and find ways to connect with people and share, you know, whether it's my testimony, whether it's let's talk about life, where are you, you know, what's happening in your world. I feel that as a wife, you know, I support Kevin in his ministry, but I also don't feel like it's his ministry.
Right.
It's
your ministry, as a family.
And so I feel that I do well in filling in the gaps when I can at home, trying to bring people into our life. Because let's face it, we're actually normal people.
Pastors and pastors' families are people.
We're pretty normal. We're pretty normal. And that's important to me. I want my kids to have a normal life, right? And to not live feeling scrutinized or any of that, that stuff. But I think that I like to think that I use our home as at least my ground zero for ministry.
Yeah.
And I like to reach out to people. I'm very relational. So I do feel that The Lord's gifted me in that, and so I try to use that however I can in a sense of ministry where I'm reaching out and checking in on people and trying to build relationships that are authentic and real. Right. When Kevin was first called to ministry in Pennsylvania, I remember your mom telling me this, and I will never forget. A wise woman. And she said, hey, listen, whatever happens, however this goes, she said, you always be true to yourself.
Right.
And I remember how she held me and, you know, she kind of put her hands on my shoulders. And that's what she said. And that was so profound and yet such a almost like a simple thing to say. But I really appreciated that. And I've stood on that for, you know, the last 6 years, 7 years that we've been on this journey. And I also feel, you know, like I'm a wife on a journey with a husband who's in full-time ministry, but I'm also a daughter on a quest, right? Also wanting to serve the Lord however he feels fit for me.
Right.
You know, and I just need to remember that this isn't for me, about Kevin Griffin, about our kids. Quite honestly, it's not even about COTN. It's all about God.
The kingdom.
Right? Yeah. And so I definitely want to live that out with integrity. And I don't definitely want to let the Lord down in any way. So,
yeah, I think we're all called to ministry. Yeah. It might look differently for different people, but it's all ministry. I know. People have said to me things before, and I'm like, I feel like this right here is the ministry that God's called me to. And I feel privileged to get to do this, to hear people's testimony. We call this program Hope Talk. So it certainly brings me hope. So what kind of in wrapping up, we call this program Hope Talk. So what is bringing you the most hope right now, currently?
Yeah, I think, what is bringing me hope? That's a good question. I think for me, I think knowing that I'm doing my best, and that how I live and how I try to show Jesus off through me is giving me hope. But I do hope that also gives others hope. I often think, man, Lord, I could be telling a completely different story had I made that one decision or had I not done that thing, my story could be completely different. And so I'm grateful that he continues to pursue. He continues to seek us out. In spite of us.
You know? Yeah.
He's just very, very, very kind that he would just continue to seek us out. And so that definitely gives me hope because I don't deserve it by any means. And so I hope that in the way that I'm living, it's giving other people hope that I've come through a lot of different, you know, turmoil and heartbreak. But so far, the end has been so much better than the hurts.
Well, that brings me hope. And we know that God, like you said, he never stops pursuing us. Just in closing, anything else that I haven't asked you already or that you haven't shared already that you would like to share?
No, I think we've covered it all other than we just got to keep pursuing the Lord. He pursues us, and let's not grow weary in the pursuit. Let's just keep going with that quest.
And we have to reach out to others and share that hope, share the pursuit of us that he pursues others also.
Yep. I think early on I was sort of bashful to share things that the Lord has brought me through, and I've learned that that doesn't help anyone. You know, it doesn't help me, and it certainly doesn't help the next person. And so I have found that there's such a freedom in sharing what the Lord has done in your life and what he's brought you from. It's completely freeing, and I do hope that people find their voice to do that.
Ruthie, thank you for joining me today on Hope Talks. It's been great to have you. And just in closing, I'm going to say a prayer for you and your family.
Awesome. Thank you. We'd appreciate it.
Lord, I just come before you today, and I thank you for Ruthie's life and her testimony and her example. And I just pray a blessing over her and Pastor Kevin and Jasmine and Jeremiah. And I just thank you for their obedience to you each step of the way, and their journey continues. And I just thank you for their lives and their leadership, Lord, and just pray a blessing over each one of them. And I ask all this in your name. Amen.
Amen.
Thank you for listening to today's broadcast of Hope Talks. I pray that as you've heard Ruthie Griffin's testimony today, that it truly has been a half hour of hope for your life. May God bless.
Hope Talks is sponsored by Church of the Nazarene in Harrisonburg in partnership with Sunshine Ministries. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure to subscribe, rate, and leave a review on Spotify or Apple Podcast. Your feedback helps us spread hope to even more listeners. Stay tuned for more uplifting stories in the next episode. Until then, keep the faith, share the love, and find joy in the hope that Jesus Christ brings.